Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.
That's right, listeners. Welcome back to the Dog Pod, the original podcast covering 13-0 Pac-12 champions into perpetuity and beyond forever. Pac-12 champions, the second-ranked CFP-bound Washington Huskies tackle football team. I'm with Law Dog here. Mitch and I just returned to the Pac Northwest from Las Vegas, fresh off our 34-31 win, third in a row against Oregon. And as Carlos Lopez, Spanish radio announcer from Tennessee, in our intro says, y hoy los patos de Oregon bow down to Washington. Buckled up, brother. You ready to go? Okay. Hey, 5 o'clock, Las Vegas time, walked over from the Mandalay Bay across the boardwalk into Allegiant Stadium, and the fervor, it felt like nothing else. And we got to kick this thing off. We're going to do a recap, but boy, tip of the cap to our man, Tony Castricone. Let's get it going.
Kalen DeBoer in his 2 years at Washington, 8-0, including 2-0 against the Oregon Ducks. Now, you know this Oregon team is highly motivated. They really can't stand the fact
that
they went 0-2 while gaining 1,100 yards in those two meetings. The Huskies took their best shot and still found a way to win. But all that stuff doesn't matter now. What matters is, can Washington go out and return to that September form offensively while holding on to what that defense has done in the month of November in the fourth quarters here down the stretch to get that championship trophy that's on the line tonight?
That's right, Tony. He was ready, and big kickoff. Game gets started.
Yeah, it was a whole lot of Dylan Johnson here early. 4 touches to start the game, including a pass from Penix, but the Huskies end up in a tricky 3rd and 2 here early at their own 44.
We've been here for a few, Kirk. It's safe to say this Pac-12 championship game has never felt like this before. Penix to the perimeter, catch made by McMillan, who gets around the corner and scoots for a first down inside the next 45.
That's when everybody, hey, McMillan's back. He's back, baby.
Yeah, and that was a big conversion because it kept that drive alive here. And then Penix got going. He finds Rome for a couple completions. Then he misses McMillan on 3rd and 16 from the Oregon 21. But that sets up Grady Gross, his first kick on scholarship.
That's right. Here we go.
Previous 3 kicks from 38 to put the Huskies up early here. No problem for Gross, the sophomore from Scottsdale.
Hey, and we never played those Grady Gross highlights, but boy, he deserved it because he was clutch and he got that scholarship. 3-0.
Yep, and that was big to just get some points after that. 15 plays, 54 yards, taking half the first quarter to do it. But it felt a little precarious, you got to admit. The Huskies up just 3-0. Mm-hmm. But then the defense comes out, forces a 3-and-out, and Jeremy Bernard gets a big 32-yard punt return, getting the Huskies back to midfield. Then they drive down to the Oregon 5, and they turn to Johnson one more time.
Play clock at 8. Johnson on the edge, racing, and muscling his way. Touchdown, Washington, the underdogs.
That's right.
Looking great so far.
Underdogs, 10-point dogs.
Odunze is out here. He's manned up. He's going to come here and then just try to pin this to open it up. And watch this. There's nobody on the edge of this defense. Once Odunze makes that block on the safety.
Even when the ball's not coming to him, Odunze doing the little things. Opening up that gap. Great block, Odunze, touchdown.
And those of us who had the money line, BT, are feeling pretty good right here, right? 10-0 right. Washington, still the first quarter. Is Death Row back? Honest question. Another 3-and-out here. It felt like maybe it was. But the Huskies get stalled again a little bit. Penix can't connect with McMillan on 3rd down again here, and the Huskies have to punt it back to the Ducks early in the second quarter here. Mm-hmm. Oregon starts from their own 10, but they move pretty methodically this time, actually. Then a crucial 3rd and 9 from the 18. Braylon Trace lining up offsides.
Oh, man.
But Muhammad comes back with a big pass breakup here on the replay of 3rd down. He's covering Franklin, and the Ducks have to settle for a field goal. So it's 10-3 Washington now. Penix gets it back. He finds Rome for another 22-yarder. He finds Westover. And then from about midfield, the Huskies get their first big strike.
Comes late pressure right at the middle. Penix backpedals and checks it for McMillan, who gathers it in and is knocked out inside the five. A bullseye from the quarterback. Huskies on the doorstep.
And this is what happens when you show the mug look, the linebackers, and then bring the safety. Watch my man Dylan Johnson pick this up. Now it's one-on-one if you're able to pick it up. He sits in there and does. Penix has just enough time. And there's our guy, Jalen McMillan. Been out of the lineup most of the year. You can see by the way he's running these routes. Doesn't have that big offensive lineman brace on, back to running like himself.
That's right, Kirk. He was back. J-Mac was back, baby.
Yeah, that was a big one. And then very next play, Huskies back to Dylan.
Dylan Johnson set to take a direct snap. First and goal from the four. Pop pass to Bernard around the end. And Jeremy Bernard. And the Huskies respond to the Dutch field goal with a quick touchdown strike.
So if you had, I mean, think about that. We'll get to DJ's day. He gets credit for a passing touchdown there.
Yeah, gets the passing touchdown. I was just going to say to Bernard on the end around. Amazing. But I mean, Grubb digging through the playbook here. 17-3 BT. I thought I was dreaming. The Huskies force another three and out. They get it back with 4:25 left in the half.
4:37 before halftime. Penix and the Huskies trying to add to this two-touchdown lead. From the pocket, looking for Odunze. Two guys were on him that time. Couldn't stop him. Out near midfield.
You have to bring three.
All the way across. They have a linebacker that helps out here, Jeffrey Bassett, who's a former safety. So you're right. It's kind of essentially a bracket. But with his speed.
Yeah. He threw it into the bracket coverage. But you know what? He's been doing that all year. And you've got to step with Roma Dunze, and you just find him, right?
That's right.
You know. Huskies do have to settle for a field goal. I wasn't too disappointed, but Lanning very wisely using his timeouts in this situation, salvaging some clock. So Grady Gross knocks in the 37-yarder, make it 20-3. Mm-hmm. But the Ducks are able to strike quickly here. We knew they were going to get the ball to start the third, so they go 75 yards in seven plays, including this brutal pass interference penalty on Jabbar Muhammad. I don't know what you guys saw in the stadium, but the ABC announcers were immediately all over criticizing this call. It was clearly just guys playing football. It was catchable, right? And DeBoer even said that coming out to the sideline reporter on the way out. I didn't think it was catchable. But that puts the Ducks in position to get six here, and it just felt like this lead should have been more. So it's 20-10 at the half. Ducks are getting the ball. They open the second half, and the Huskies are able to hoard them to a 4th-and-5 from the Oregon 47. And this was – I feel like the Ducks win this game, and this is the crucial fulcrum. Right. It's 4th-and-5 from the Oregon 47. Lanning, you know, has been doing it against us all season and the last two games. And he finally gets one here on 4th-and-5.
Right.
It was good coverage, but Nix gets the slant to Troy Franklin. Ducks are able to start the third with a 15-play, 75-yard drive. And it was Terrence Ferguson with the second touchdown of the game. So it's 20-17. Washington and the Huskies, they get a false start with the ball back, and then Penix coughs it up.
Yeah.
His 9th interception of the year. And I mean, it looks like the Ducks are in business, but just
Rome felt like he got held on that. Rome felt like he got held on that route, I will say. But at the same time, Penix shouldn't have thrown it. I would like, you know, like you're nitpicking here, but that was a tough one.
I thought that was a little bit chippy, especially when we're saying, hey, let him play on the pass interference, just, you know, right at the end of the half. But
yep, that's right.
Literally, BT, I'm turning and uttering these words, these exact words. Bo Nix has only thrown two picks all year. We're going to get one right here.
Nix flushed, scanning, and throw right. An interception threw it right to Mies Pau. Don't know what he was looking at. But
God, Mies has just stepped up, man. What a play. And keeping his feet.
He's had a monster year, I think, and moving him to the Husky position, I think, has worked out really well. Mm-hmm. Again, though, the Huskies are not doing much with it here. They end up punting, and it was the quick scoring drives, BT. This one was just three plays, 62 yards. Jordan James gets the touchdown. It gives the Ducks their first lead of the game, 24-20. What did I say to you guys last week in the preview? All season, these Huskies have answered when they needed to. the very most. And right here was no exception.
100-yard game this season for Odunze. Caught 8 balls the first game, has 7 tonight. Penix. Downfield, and the catch is made by McMillan. A long route, a long run, and the Huskies are in the red zone.
I mean, just so amazing to see him back. It's what we wanted. What a step up. I mean, when you thought all his losses are going sideways, just wow.
Honestly, just take a pause for a second on that. When he went down in the Oregon game, right, it was the next 4 or 5 games that this offense really struggled. And I'm not saying, you know, that they weren't good. But they just, in terms of scoring touchdowns on every drive, it's like when you got 3 NFL receivers to throw to, you could tell the difference. And McMillan, when he was out there and healthy, and maybe they were building towards this all season. They said, hey, we're undefeated. Even if we drop a game, we need him on December 1st. And whatever the case was, they got him back and healthy, and he made a huge difference in this game. So then after that huge catch by McMillan, Penix giving his body a little bit on the Ducks 18, running for a crucial third down, kind of leaning into it at the left shoulder, sets up first and goal. And here's some more Dylan Johnson for you.
In shotgun formation, Johnson shifts around to his left. 3 receivers bunched over to that side. Johnson again bulldozes in. A flex for the Husky running game, a number 7. Over 100 yards, a couple of touchdowns, Washington back on top.
Go behind the big man and watch him open it up.
Wow.
That's beautiful.
The O-line just bowling over the Oregon D-line on that. I mean, that playlist was, wow. Just wow.
Well, we'll get to it. I mean, this Husky O-line came to play. But remember, they really answered right here. I mean, that's exactly what this team needed. 27-24, now they're up. And defense, not done, BT. Mm-hmm. All season, they come up with these big stops in the fourth quarter. And then right here, I felt like Washington was 2nd and 5 literally all night. And that's Oregon was 2nd and 10 all night. Mm-hmm. And here on 2nd and 11, Knicks can't connect with Bucky Irving. Sets up a crucial 3rd and 9 from the Oregon 36.
You got ZTF right here, who's the edge player, probably going to bring him.
Pressure comes. Good call by you and by this defensive staff. Raylan Trice brings him down for a loss. Edge Huskies that time. It's 4th down.
You put one of your best pass rushers here, and then they bring the twist around, and it's Trice to the left who comes around off that blitz. He occupies the offensive lineman, and it frees it up for 8.
Braylon coming underneath and stopping what would have been a massive, you know, gain. I mean, just incredible. Braylon Trice, way to go.
Honestly, I mean, we were kind of waiting for him to turn it on this season. I don't know if a fire got lit under him or what happened, but he has definitely, you know, broken out in the second half of the year, and that was an absolutely enormous play. So now, 9 minutes left, 3-point game. It could not have felt good for Dan Lanning to be kicking here, but what does he have to do? I mean, from his own 36, that's what made that play so huge. He does the smart thing, BT. He trusts the best defense in the Pac-12. Of course, there's no stopping us or beating us, so it doesn't matter. Penix, it's just going to be Penix.
First and 10.
Penix, who looks downfield for Polk, who comes back.
We go JP.
Catch. He beat Nico Reed out near the 45.
JP's back, baby. Oh, man.
I mean, 1,000 yards on the season, and for what, 130 years of Husky football, no 2,000-yard receivers, and then we've done it 2 seasons in a row with JP, and then he had a nice game as well. What do Heisman Trophy winners do, BT? How about fourth quarter championship game? 5 for 7, 57 yards, and then your last one, finding your third string tight end.
There's Movis.
Penix lobs into the end zone. Touchdown, Quentin Moore, with the play of his life. You never would expect him to be the guy to make the play that could put them in the college football playoff. Wow.
Check your notes, Chris Fowler. That is Quentin Moore,
that is
third
Quentin,
string tight end. There Quentin he is. The Moore's play of his life is amazing. Right.
It's like one of our post-game celebration. I will say, one of our buddies was like, dude, I had to check my notes. That was Quentin Moore. He was like, I think my aunt is his English teacher. It was like in high school, I wrote and was like, these guys, amazing. And you drop this play and the big man in the corner gets those paws up and makes the play. Just amazing.
Yeah. And did you hear all week they've been working on it? Moore was like so happy that this play is going to be installed, just waiting for the right moment. And
just
here
wait
we go,
for
fourth quarter to build the lead here. So it's 34-24 now. Oregon, though, just will not. They will not go away. They just need two plays here. The long scramble from Nix and then that tightrope touchdown down the other side by Treshawn Holden. So the Ducks cut it now back down to 34-31 with just 2 minutes to go. The Ducks go for the onside kick. What's Lanning supposed to do, right? I mean, he's got the timeouts, but he just saw what his defense did out there. So not trusting his D that much anymore. They bounce the kick out of bounds. Huskies get a nice bounce there. But they need two more first downs to ice it. And on third and four from the Oregon 49, Pettix comes through one more time.
I mean, they're just going to run it, right? They're going to run it. Third and four.
Has time. Short throw. Catch made. McMillan, first down. Washington. Two elite receivers on one side of the field. He was in front of Evan Williams. And all Nix can do is continue to visualize and hope. But that should just about do it.
Like I said, this goes against that conventional wisdom. What a matchup they created. McMillan, one of your best go-to guys in a slot against Evan Williams, 33, who's a safety. He doesn't cover well, not to mention he gives the cushion. So the formation, stacking him, creates that matchup. And again, doesn't surprise me. They got aggressive.
I mean, Evan Williams out there playing with a club that made Asa Turner's club look tiny out in the corner. But that route was just set up, man.
So maybe still not over here. Lanning does. I'm going to tip my hat to him. He does a nice job managing the clock in this game. They called their timeouts very well. They saved them for these moments. But the defense, the Ducks defense just could not get the stop. So now they're forcing the Huskies into a crucial third and nine from the Oregon 42, clearly beyond Gross's field goal range here. And not much time left. The Huskies, though, would they run that clock or would they throw it and try to go to Rome, their main guy? But they needed one more first down, and here it is.
Does it run backwards? They've got to go back to the man, Tony Castricone.
101 to go. Third and nine. If they can take 15 seconds off the clock, they're going to win the ball game. Toss sweep right. Dylan Johnson cuts up field. Oh, he's going to go across the 35-30. He slides down to the 25. The Huskies are going to win the Pac-12 championship. Dylan Johnson did it. He picked up a first down, and the Huskies are going to the college football playoff. Do you believe it, Huskies?
The voice cracking.
I believe, baby!
Cam Cleland celebrates like a fan.
An ice bath for Kalen DeBoer. 24-2, and he's 3-0 against the Oregon Ducks.
That's right.
13-0. Celebrate, baby. Celebrate all you want. This Washington team has done it. Cam, we're going to the college football playoff, baby. I'm going to hug every damn person in this stadium.
You do it, Cam.
Purple party in Las Vegas. Sprinting out onto the field. Washington 34, Oregon 31.
Enjoy it.
I love this team. I love these coaches. I love it all. These underdogs
have done
it again.
That's right.
Cue up the Sinatra. They've done it Washington's way. Elise is on the field with Braylon Trice.
You did it, Braylon. There's tears in your eyes. What are the emotions?
It's crazy right now. I can't even explain it. It's been a long road, a long journey, and we did it. We really did it. It's crazy to me.
You are 13-0. You are Pac-12 champs. You are heading to the college football playoffs. I know it hasn't sunk in, but you've been dreaming of this. Well, what does it mean right now?
It means the world. I'm just so happy to be here and doing this next to my boys, my family. Like, there's nobody else I'd rather go to battle with and do this with every single day. Like, everybody in this building that's wearing purple deserves this right now.
I had to play that to the end because, man, hearing from Braylon Trice and saying everyone that's in this building that's wearing purple right now deserves this. And also, you know, tip of the cap to just a legend Husky, Elise Woodward. It's just awesome down on the sideline. Always supporting in all sports. Elise the best, you know. And hearing Tony become such a dog, replacing Bob Rondo, letting him just go nuts with his voice crack. And I'll tell you, we'll get into the I wish I had shared my phone number with the couple behind me, the family behind me, because they were, you know, nice couple, a little bit old, you know, maybe 10 years older than us. And you bond during this game of just, you cannot believe you're the 10-point underdog. You've wanted this so much. And the amount of grown adults crying in the stands around of just, we're going to the CFP. We're the perpetual Pac-12 champs. Nobody believed in us. You know, I mean, it was just a really, really freaking cool moment when, you know, and when DJ finally, when you're like, okay, now it's over. Now it's over. We've got it.
No, absolutely. And a lot to unpack there. 34-31, they win it. The Huskies' third Pac-12 title in the last 8 seasons, 13-0, which has been said many times. Let's say it again. 13-0, baby.
That's right.
18th. Their 18th conference title, the forever title, BT, passing UCLA, though, for second place. And that's how the Pac-12 ends, with Oregon bowing down to Washington.
To Washington and, one last time.
I mean, I wish I'd been there with you guys. That just looked like an epic time. I had an epic time of my own. But just watching this game was amazing. It just, from start to finish, Huskies jumped out to a lead. They controlled and commanded the game until Oregon kind of rattled off those 21 points in the third quarter, second and third quarter. This was all Washington. And then they were able to just kind of keep in control the whole time. Oregon never really having the ball and a chance to win it. It was always Michael Penix and the Huskies with the chance to end the game, and they did it.
And continue to be aggressive. Let's talk about that offensive and defensive performance in the Pac-12 championship. Real quick on the defense, I'll just get it started. I want to hear what you guys think. Quick tip of the cap to the freaking War Dogs, man. Jabbar, Braylon, and Dom played the entire game, every 56 snaps on defense, man. All up secondary. They held Troy Franklin to 4 catches for 34 yards. Amazing. Misha and Eliza, they played 45 and 49 snaps. Dom plays the whole game. Asa was in there. He looked good when he was in there. He only played 21 snaps. Cam Fab had 36, but boy, he had some huge, that knockover of Ferguson, who's going for that first down wide open, just split him in the air. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, guys, like, what a difference when Asa Turner and Cam Fab are back there, right? Oh, yeah. Like, we saw a completely different secondary. They were more aggressive. It moves Dom Hampton closer to the line of scrimmage, where he can be an enforcer, which is just freaking fantastic. And, oh my God, I thought Cam Fab just was just amazing. Let's not lose sleep on Thule in his game.
Yeah,
I mean, he had a monster eating up a Bucky Irving on one of those drives that was just fantastic. They continue to look like they're improving game over game, which, oh my God, is the sky the limit now, if that's the case?
They were really peaking at the end of last season. And I felt like that's what we were watching on Friday night. Like, they were hitting their stride right at the right time.
The interesting thing was, I was freaking out every time they pulled Thule out, and I was like, he's out. And if you look at his snap count, he didn't play a lot of snaps. Like, he played about half, so it was like 38 snaps, but they had a lot of edge pressure where it was like 3 or 4 edge guys in that was working really well, you know, on that critical third down stop where they run Braylon Trice underneath off of the rush pressure and cuts across underneath to tackle Bucky Irving. Like, it was working. What they were doing was working. It was just, I mean, wow.
They brought ZTF on one of those NFL blitzes, like a linebacker. Mm-hmm. And then Braylon came underneath to swallow up Nicks. Like, that was a great defensively coached game, guys.
It was great. I mean, Tupitala had 7 tackles. Eddie has 6. Raylan Goforth has proven to be such a great addition off the bench. And a lot of people are like, oh, you know, you think you got a starter. He's not a starter. I'm like, hey, he gets it. He gets his role, and he's great. Carson Bruner goes with 1 injury. You know, I mean, he's like, we don't know what it is, but he did go down. He started out playing a lot. I think he ended up getting about 12 snacks, but he went down. But I mean, just absolutely holding, except for, you know, tough third quarter and then a tough prevent at the very end. The D just came alive. Love it.
Yeah. I mean, the quick strikes, we talked about it in the recap. It's like those were very frustrating, but at the same time, you know, your offense had given you a cushion. And yeah, prevent is clearly not a good combo with these guys. Like, they needed to keep attacking a little bit, I'd say.
And those Absolutely. Big tight ends over the top. Like, we saw that with Stanford a little bit. And we saw that with Ferguson, had a fine day, you know, in those ends of places. But man, wow, this defense just came to play. Should we talk a little bit about the offense?
Yeah, baby.
Please be.
Here we go. 483 yards. I mean, amazing. 70% completion. Still 7 penalties on the offense. We got to clean that up. But I mean, Quentin Moore plays 8 snaps and has the freaking catch of his life, man. I mean, just incredible. Jalen McMillan, your top rated PFF receiver. 40 snaps, 131 yards on 9 catches. He is back. If you haven't seen the UW Animal video yet, we've got a McMillan. It's just, just amazing. Giles Jackson, he plays just 6 snaps, wasn't needed that much. And I don't know if he's still nursing an injury. They just didn't need to get him in the game. Left to right, it was all game. They played all but one snap where he had to come out. Fautano, Kalepo, Brailsford, Buello, Rosengarten, just mauling over the Oregon defensive line to get Dylan Johnson.
And it got better as the night went on, too.
It sure did. Wow. It sure did. It was amazing. I mean, DJ had some amazing, critical. I mean, pushing his way, I think, into the pantheon of Husky great backs. Where you're going to, like, when you're doing a top 10 Husky great backs, you're going to have to put his name in there. You know, for the top five rushing seasons, you're going to have to put his name in that. 152 yards on 28 carries and a touchdown pass he got credited with, we talked about earlier. J-Mac and JP were back. Dunsey's a beast. Tight ends came when they needed to. Just great.
Johnson kind of been banged up all season, but definitely right in the boot after what game was that? But the Utah game or anywhere late in the season, he was in the boot. It was like, is he going to play again? And then he comes out and you could see him limping on the sideline in this game. So he was giving it his all. And not only that, but I mean, they mentioned it kind of in part of the recap there, picking up the blitz. He was picking up the blitz because what Oregon try to do? They tried to do exactly what ASU did, shoot the A-gap all night, and Johnson was getting in there, getting a body on somebody, and picking up the blitz and letting Penix throw. I mean, almost more valuable than what he did on the ground, but obviously just a monster performance.
So good in pass pro. So good.
Dylan was amazing. I've rewatched the game several times now, guys. Like, of course, his timing on those pulls, right? Like, he just hit it just at the right time. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely incredible. Hugh Millen kind of broke it down a little bit one afternoon on that. It was just masterful. And then, guys, how great is it to have our 3 NFL receivers all show up and ball out? How about Polk? I mean, J-Mac, incredible. Looked fast. No brace. You knew what you could count on from Rome, who made great catches, did his thing. But Polk, guys, in that 2-game series, right, that 2-play series where he wrestled that ball away up the sideline and then one caught hand, that one over that super tight window. Oh, my gosh. It was just absolutely. And then they panned in, I think, on Tosh Lupoi at one point in time. And he was just like, his jaw was just like flabbergasted. It was like a thing of freaking beauty.
Well, what do you do? What do you do when you've got 3 NFL receivers? You've got one on each end and then you've got one in the slot. So how are you going to cover that? Right. And, you know, Oregon opted to go 2 safeties high for quite a bit of the game, which is why they said, great, you're going to give us Dylan Johnson for 5 yards every time. So we're going to take it. But the pressure that puts on a defense is just you cannot put a price tag on it. It's just been invaluable for this Husky team. And to have them all healthy again, cooking, and then coming into the playoff, it's going to be huge.
And when the safety one last comment was late, too. Yeah.
Absolutely. One last comment. Ryan Grubb taking what they are giving you, to your point, Law Dog, right? I've got all these toys to play with. He was just eating from the buffet all day. Hey, long line over on the prime rib. I'm going to spend my time over here on the seafood, baby. I loved it.
That's amazing. I love it. You want to get you want to seal up that surf? I'm going turf. You choose, buddy. You decide what you want there. Wow. I mean, it was just an electric environment. Inside of the game, I think we got lucky, and thank you to our friends who are, you know, have more, you know, tied to ownership than we do, who gave us some really good seats. So we had an incredible vantage point at about the 40-yard line on the 100 level, and it was just electric. Big tip of the cap to Spencer Hawes, the Husky legend, hoopster, who got our section up off their feet. And, you know, our, you know, it's rich guys, they're sitting down a little bit. Spencer's like, hey, get up. Everybody's standing up when Spencer Hawes says, get up off your feet. Super loud Husky section, just electric. I mean, some people around us that I just won't ever forget, man, because we, you know, you experience this moment with strangers that are diehard, you know, purple and gold wearing fans, who was just, and then the halftime, I hate to say, when we came out in half and we're up, and look, they came back in the third quarter, give them credit, but we came up at halftime up into the you know, the bar and restaurant area, and it was just a celebration. Like, everyone's like, hey, we got this, let's get it together, you know, don't rest, get back in this thing. But it was great. All up, I'd say it was kind of crazy, just trip report. Beginning of the day, a lot of Oregon fans, obviously, they showed up. Give them credit, man. They show up. They wear their green and yellow. They're there. In the early, kind of at the beginning, it's funny. It's like you're walking past each other in the Mandalay, and you're not even making eye contact, man. It's early. Yeah. Nobody's talking trash yet. And
like,
then later on,
like, you know, Randy Johnson on the day of a start, right, BT? Yeah. Like, don't talk to me.
Just don't even look at him. Just ice. Just straightforward, buddy. It's too early. And then, you know, so, hey, a little bit chippy. See, people start. There's this big walk across from Mandalay. I'd recommend to anyone, you're going down there, stay at Mandalay, stay at the Luxor, walk across that bridge. It makes it easy, and it's super cool. But, you know, there, people are starting to get a little bit chippy there. People got some things to say, and that's fine. You know, going to the game, amazing. Allegiant Stadium is world-class, man. They have built that thing for football. Vegas knows how to get it done. And then, of course, you know, post-game, the walk across, like, Oregon fans real quiet. And, I saw one of my good buddies who'd been on the show back in the day, Stewie the Duck, did his MBA at UW undergrad, Oregon, and he was cool. And his brother, I understand it. He was like, dude, I can't talk right now. And I can't even shake your hand. I'm like, dude, all good, man. I've been there myself. A tough loss. And the best thing is just walk your ass away. Like, it just amazing, amazing electric environment. The only thing I'll say, you know, we stuck around for Saturday and got a chance to watch the rest of the games to, like, hey, let's see where our fate lies. And I'd say the two best venues we went to, if I can make a recommendation, the Doghouse at Resorts World International, super cool. Great sports bar, nice couch, good view, vantage point of the TVs, good food there. And then Circa, the Circa Sportsbook is just another level, man, of a place where you're going to go watch some games, have an easy access to a sports book, and kind of see how the chips fall. Those are two that I would just shout out of great place to stay. Awesome Vegas trip. We have to see what Indianapolis has for us, I guess, moving forward. But I'm glad we got one. So
there was that rumor that Vegas, that Big Ten was looking at Vegas, and I wouldn't rule it out. There's being kind of a rotation now with a national footprint, guys.
That should be a no-brainer. Like, Allegiant Stadium, let's go back to that a little bit, BT. They were masterful. It's amazing to look at, all black on the outside with the Raider silver, thing around it. It's pretty badass, right? First off. B, in the game experience is amazing. And they had the usual, like, DJ walking around and, like, some band at halftime, blah, 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 all that stuff. But what I liked about it was they were playing at, you know, the atmosphere on all the ribbons were all virtual, digital around the stadium. Yeah. And when one team would score, they would play their team sound, you know, they had their logos flashing, their fight songs were on. And so they were ratcheting up, like, the experience, and it was fantastic. Like, it was just dialed in.
So amazing. I mean, they did a great job, concessions, everything. It's and great vantage points from every seating angle, I think. And just incredible. And I will say, where we sat, I was a little bit jealous because they actually, not only you can't get through from one section to the other via ticket check, but they have a wall. They have a wall where you can't cross, right? You cannot get from, let's say, the 20-yard seats to the 40-yard seats. And the Husky
players, these are Raider fans, BT.
These are Raider fans. Yeah, keep apart. Let's keep these guys apart, right?
Yeah.
The Husky came up into the stands after the game, but they came up by the tunnel. And so, you know, our friends who were sitting around the 10-yard line, they're up there getting pictures with Penix. They're seeing all the dogs were up there. That was pretty sweet. All in all, look, you know, again, accuse me of over celebrating this if all you want. I don't give a shit. These dogs are the perpetual, into perpetuity, forever Pac-12 champions. And in a time where we went in as 10-point underdogs and just stuck it to our biggest rival to go into the CFP, we're not done yet. We're not done yet. We got at least one.
Just not finished.
Maybe two more games. So, hey, real quick, hammer this thing out, man. So the CFP comes out, and obviously, big news. What happens as soon as Georgia goes down against Alabama, you start to see, oh, this wasn't what we thought it's going to be. Florida State gets the short end of the stick. Real quick thing, we're going to do a full episode on Texas, but this is the one thing I want to say. Maybe they should be favored. That's fine. I wish they were favored by more. Light a spark under this team. Light it. It's fine. But I'm going to say this. This is not 2005 Vince Young, Michael Huff, Roderick Wright, Longhorns. Come on. They're not the top rushing or passing offense in the Big 12. They got a strong defense. They're top three, fine, in the Big 12. And you know what? They're not killing everybody. 29-26 over TCU, 33-30 over K-State, 31-24 Houston, lost to Oklahoma. This team is good. They're very talented. They're coached by a complete freaking hothead, which I love, but they're beatable. They're beatable.
Well, they are beatable, but Coach K is also on that other sideline, BT. So show him some respect. I mean, he was
always.
I mean, Kwiatkowski is our guy. He's always going to be death row defense architect. But you know, this, we beat him in the Alamo Bowl last year. So it's not as though this game is unwinnable. I think you look back on the going into Friday night, it was like, oh, this is unwinnable for the Huskies. Ducks are going to win big, right? A lot of people predicted, oh, Ducks are going to win big, picking them to cover, and it's like, now I think everyone's starting to catch up a little bit. We're 4-point dogs, not 10-point dogs in the playoffs. So I think Huskies are starting to catch up to the national respect level here.
And guys, look, we're going to be dogs regardless, whomever we play. Right?
Like,
Booger McFarland just came out with all this stuff about how, like, the Dogs are the fourth talented team in the CFP and all this blah, blah, blah. Right, you know the narrative, right? So regardless, we're going to be dogs. Great. Yeah. Fine. We'll roll that. I'll tell you what. I'd way rather play Texas than Alabama or Michigan. So bring it. Let's go. Yeah.
I'm with you.
Let's talk about the four. So obviously – Georgia with the big loss on Saturday night, and then everyone's like, oh God, what's going to happen, right? And so Michigan bumps up to number one. Huskies bump up to number two. I mean, I thought there was a pretty, you know, we were thinking it's possible Florida State could be three, the undefeated teams, and then it would be either Texas or Alabama, most likely with Texas, but the committee just couldn't bear to do it. They let Alabama in at the fourth seed, and then they bumped out Florida State. I mean, pretty rough going there, but I think Mitch is right. The Dogs got the best draw they could have hoped for in this foursome. So, and I mean, granted, I'd rather be in the Rose Bowl, but I'd rather be playing Texas than be playing Alabama in the Rose Bowl.
That's true. And I'll say
from a matchup perspective, you know me, I'm a historian. I wanted to play in one last Rose Bowl, BT, but it's not meant to be.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we all would have loved that sort of Michigan, Washington Rose Bowl, but the better, you know, but again, you know, the opponent, if you're going to pick, you're going to pick Texas out of this group. A quick note on Alabama, and I will say the guys sitting behind us during the Georgia-Alabama game at the Doghouse, it was like Central Casting sent out Alabama fan. Like Saturday Night Live was, you know, Will Ferrell is doing Alabama guy. Roll Tide, you just don't know. It doesn't matter who you got. Roll. We're like, okay, bud, like, let's take a log off the fire, dude. It's just so funny. But these guys, look, again, this isn't 2009 Crimson Tide. This isn't Mark Ingram, Trent Richardson, Julio Jones. I mean, come on. Who, like, at that point, we're, and I say maybe in the last CFP, we're like, glad to be there. Nope. Not this time.
Yeah.
This is an Alabama that's like, what are they, you know, number eight offense, eight quarterback, eight rushing. You know, they have one PFF top 100 receiver, one. 27-24 over Auburn. 26-20 A&M.
Well, fourth and 31 against Auburn to win it.
Against Auburn, 24-21 over Arkansas and a loss to Texas. Again, yes, if they make it past Michigan, they'll be favored. Fine, don't care. But I'm just saying, everybody's beatable.
This is the most wide open the CFP has been, maybe any single year that it's been held. And I think you look out and go, you know what, that Alabama team, that's probably the most beatable. I mean, we're talking about 15 straight years of 10 wins or more, five national titles. So, you know, it's maybe not that much of a backhanded compliment to say this might not be the best Alabama team we've seen, right?
But, I mean, come on, guys.
But it's still going to be a good team. But, I mean, this is probably not their best team. So, yeah, I think from a matchup perspective, this is about as much as the Huskies could have hoped for.
Okay, so we talked about potential CFP opponents, but one was left out, and we thought there might have been a good chance we'd be against Florida State, another undefeated team in the Power Five who got left out. Lotto, talk to me about this one.
Yeah, well, I didn't even tell you guys I was going to do this, but here's a little mini Wayback Machine on the Florida State Seminoles, okay? Mm. I mean, if you are a Florida State fan, you have got to just be seething right now.
Oh, this just pissed. Just
this
pissed.
Team and this program, their early history, fairly unremarkable. In 1906, they stopped playing football, and they don't start again until after World War II. So a lot of teams were kind of suspending football in that time. But they don't start till World War II, and they join the Dixie Conference. Then they go independent in 1951 for the next 40 years. But in the mid-70s, they have this brutal three-year stretch where they win just four games out of 33. They fire two head coaches, and then they finally settle on a guy named Bobby Bowden. Heard of him?
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that guy.
Yeah. So Bowden takes a 3-8 team and goes 5-6 in year one. Pretty unremarkable, right? Yeah. But then he wins 10 games in three of the next four seasons, gets the Seminoles to a couple of Orange Bowls. And in his first 11 seasons, he has the Noles ranked six times in the final rankings. Oh, he wins five bowl games. He has the program reaching new heights. But then in 1987, something happens and they find another gear. Deion Sanders.
Oh.
That season, the Noles go 11-1. They beat Nebraska in the 1988 Orange Bowl, and they finished national runners-up. And then from there, guys, 1987 all the way through 2000, 14 seasons, Florida State Seminoles finish in the top five every single season, win 10 or more games every single season. That was an NCAA record that was just eclipsed by Alabama last year.
Oh, yeah.
And they win two Fiesta Bowls in that time, three Orange Bowls, four Sugar Bowls, and two national titles, 1993-99. They lost 19 games during those 14 years, BT. Three of those were bowl games being played for the national title.
It's crazy.
And then 10 others, plus their one tie in that stretch, came either against Miami or Florida. So they were at the top of college football.
That was the team.
Bowden never quite he never eclipses the top 15 again after that 2000 season, but I mean, that was an amazing run. And then 2000-2009, Bowden's starting to slip a little bit. He finishes out of the rankings altogether in three of those last four seasons, 2006-7, 8, 9, and he's forced out. I mean, he's the Newt Rockne of the state of Florida, the Tom Osborne of the ACC, and he's literally being asked to leave. That's how far he had taken the program, to the point where they're like, you're not good enough anymore for us.
For the program you got.
From literally nothing to the best team of the 90s, and he's out on the street. People call Nebraska the team of the 90s. They did win three national titles. They finished in the top eight seven times. But remember what I just said. Florida State, two titles, and the top five every single year. So, I mean, those two were powerhouses of the 90s. Jimbo was kind of able to get them rolling in, four top 10 seasons in his first seven seasons, wins three ACC titles, wins the 2013 national championship. But since he left for A&M, it's been tough. And Willie Taggart, guys, goes 9-12 and is fired midway through season two. His losing season in 2018 was the first losing season Florida State had experienced since Bowden's first year in 1976. 41 fucking years without a losing season until Willie Taggart. So this is a proud program, a ton of history, national respect. And look at what they're, I mean, they don't deserve what they're going through right now. They are just, they are getting left out in the cold. And I've got to say, if I was a Florida State fan, I would be livid. And I understand why they are.
All right, that's it for us here at the Dog Pod. Again, relish that win. Support Husky Nation every way that you can. If there's a way that you can get down to New Orleans, make it happen. I mean, I think I'm flying. I have like a 9-stopover flight to get there, but I'm going to make it happen. If it's within your means, try to get there. And hey, you know, be smart. Book those refundable flights if you want. Get something into Houston, but try to make that happen as well and support this team, because you don't know what's going to happen again. You got to get out there and join it. Can I get a Go Dogs for everybody, huh?
Go Dogs. Woof,
woof, woof.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.